Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the My Empty Hands podcast. I just wanted to go ahead and give a little peek into how the sausage is made in that for this particular episode. Disclaimer that there's a little bit of spicy language, so you know, if that's something that's troubling for you, just a heads up on that. Secondary thing is made a little mistake in having the wrong microphone on my end hooked up, so I don't think that's gonna hurt the quality too much, but you know, got some extra background things actually on this part of the recording. You probably hear my dog chiming in, so just a heads up. But yeah, I think it's going to be a great episode, and I hope you all enjoy, and thank you. Hello, 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 and welcome to the My Empty Hands podcast, a podcast about martial arts focusing on Kenpo. And I am Reggie Darden, and today I'm excited to have John Hackelman with me today. We're just going to, you know, chat about his journey and you know, whatever else we decide to stumble upon. So to just kind of kick things off, to give you a little insight into my background. So I started in Kenpo in the early to mid 90s. I'm from San Diego and started training there. A friend of mine, we saw The Perfect Weapon with Jeff Speakman, and we're instantly drawn to the Kenpo goodness, and found a school, started training there. The curriculum was essentially that of the Tracy's Kenpo kind of lineage. So I started there and trained there for about 2-3 years. Got almost to my third brown when I left for the Army. While I was in the Army, I did a little bit of Taekwondo and Hapkido and some boxing. Got out of the military and still wanted to train. I was then living in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and but I just couldn't really find the kind of school that really worked for me. So I just kind of did my own thing for a little bit, and then I stumbled upon my other love, which is of Capoeira. And I've been doing Capoeira, coming up on 17 years now. But I still, you know, kept my love for Kenpo, and found a school about two or three years ago. And it is an American Kenpo school, and I've been training that and enjoying that. As of this recording, I got my green belt about a month ago, so just really enjoying the training and just, you know, kind of looking for you know, what's coming next, and excited for what's coming next. And you know, now that I have this podcast, I get to, you know, talk with not only Kenpo folks, but also other martial artists. And you know, I'm just a big fan of the stories. I love hearing how people got involved and just what their experience with is like. So I will turn it over to you. If you could go ahead and let me and the listeners know, you know, how did you get started in the martial arts? Where did it all start for you? And we'll just kind of go through your story.
Oh shit! Okay, that's a long story, man. let's see. I started. My journey started probably in sixth grade, because I don't know what grade would I be in ten. So I was in fifth or sixth grade, but I knew that I was grew up in Honolulu, Hawaii, and it was kind of a rough area. It wasn't like a super ghetto area, but it was definitely a very rough, you know, working lower middle class or middle class area, but it was rough. I mean, and people in Hawaii like to fight. My mom, we moved from the mainland, New York, when I was like four. And my mom heard stories about, you know, how rough it got for young blonde kids, you know, over there. They did not like, you know, blonde kids in Hawaii, Honolulu especially. And, you know, they had a word for it, and it was howly, but it was usually preceded by fucking. So it was usually fucking howly. And then it was usually ended by either go back to the mainland or what are you looking at? You want to fight? You know, so it wasn't a really nice place. So my mom was able to get us, since we weren't in a really nice neighborhood, my mom knew some people she met, because she got a job when we first moved there. And she met this lady that knew someone that worked in the cafeteria of a nicer school. So she was able to get me to go to a nicer elementary school, not so rough. And so it was in a really nicer neighborhood. But I kept hearing stories about that junior high school, which starts at seventh grade, right? At seventh, eighth, ninth in Hawaii. And I knew that in a year or two, when I went to the junior high school, there was no nicer junior high school that my mom could get me to, because there just wasn't one. The kids from that elementary school usually went straight to private school, like Punahou or somewhere where we couldn't go. My mom's job and my dad's job, we couldn't go there to a private school. And so I knew that in a year, when I went from the elementary school, which was a nice school, to the junior high school, which wasn't very nice, I knew things were going to get really bad for me. So I started panicking. My parents didn't. My mom, they got divorced already. So my mom didn't really worry about it, because adults don't really see it. Even, you know, they just don't see the, you know, kids are a lot more, they're a lot meaner, you know, they show it more. So is that a dog?
Yeah, sorry. So bad podcaster here. My dog decided to wake up, and she's got this toy.
God, my dog has the same squeaky toy.
Yeah, I'm trying to take it away from her, but she's pretty strong.
Actually, my dog just heard that. My dog just heard that and went running towards hers. That's funny.
Okay, let's get rid of this. I'm podcasting. Go back to sleep.
So anyway, where were we? So I looked around and I told my mom, like, why do we have to stay here? It's going to get really, I was scared. I was really scared of going to this, you know, because I heard so many stories from kids in our elementary school about how terrible this junior high school is going to be and what they did. They had something called Kill Howley Day, and they would beat up Howleys all the time. When I tell that to my mom would say, come on, it's they're overacting, you know, they're overreacting, and it won't be that bad. But I was scared. So I started on my own. I started looking through the Yellow Pages because I knew I had to do some martial arts training. For some reason, I knew that martial arts, I had to learn martial arts before I got to junior high school. So I think I was like 10 years old, and I found the one, there was in the Yellow Pages, there was the logo, and I really liked this logo. And it was Godin School of Self-Defense. And so I said, I want to try that one, because there was a guy kicking another guy in the face, and I want to go there. So I called, and I asked how much, and it was like, I don't know, back then, this was 1970. So it was probably like, it was, and my instructor wasn't teaching martial arts for money. He did it as a front for his crime operations. So my instructor was a heavy criminal, spent, you know, a lot of years in prison. But I didn't know that then. I was a 10-year-old kid. So I call, he answers the phone. And he said it was like $15 or $10 or something. So I said, okay. So I got the money and I took the bus. I had to catch two buses. And I walked into this, it was on 404 Pi'ikoi Avenue in Honolulu, Hawaii. And I remember walking in the door of this little, it was under 800 square feet. It was like 600 square feet. I mean, it was tiny. It was like a room. Oh, my gym now is 10,000 square feet. So, I mean, sometimes I imagine like, it was like 600 and my gym now is 10,000. And I was like, oh shit.
So I'm training in a closet.
It was like a closet. So I walk in and I just looked around and there was people training, black geese, and they were sweating and they're all locals. Nobody looked like me. There was no blonde kids. And I walk in and I knew watching these guys hitting the bag and hitting the makiwara. And I knew when I walked in that door, this sounds cliche, but it's true. I knew when I walked in that door that I'm going to be there for the rest of my life. Whatever that was, I liked the feeling of it. I loved everything about it. And so I walked into my instructor in there. He had a little office, the size of, I don't know what it was. It was a tiny office. And this big local Hawaiian guy, and sit over there. Yeah, what you want? Yeah. And I told him what I wanted. I wanted to learn how to fight and stuff. He's like, yeah, okay, no problem. And go out there. And there was no kids' classes back then. So it was just a class with adults. It was probably one other kid and me and a bunch of adults punching each other and stuff. And it was a system called Kajikenpo. But he had everything. It was Chinese Kenpo and then Kajikenpo. So he was kind of teaching Kajikenpo, but his sign said Chinese Kenpo in the beginning. He kind of changed that later. But anyways, I go on, I train. I knew that was what I wanted to do. And I stayed with Godin from 1970 when I walked in that door till 2001 when he passed away. So that's how long I stayed with him. I stayed with him through my, you know, my fights, my first amateur fight, my first pro fight, the Golden Gloves fighting, the first no holds barred fight in Hawaii. It was anywhere in the United States. That was 1976. It was in Honolulu, Hawaii, and I stayed with him. He gave me my black belt, and through his going to incarcerations, in and out of prison, I always stayed loyal to him, even though a lot of people that taught for him at different schools, like different locations under his name, changed the name of their school. I mean, people, you know, because they didn't want to be affiliated, because some of his crimes, you know, he was on the front page, you know. So, but I stayed with him, you know, and then he passed away in 2001. And I've been trying to carry on his martial arts, not his criminal past or his moral compass. I tried to stay with his martial arts mentality, his martial arts system. And I changed the name from Kaju Kenpo to Hawaiian Kenpo in 1985 because I wanted to take out all the katas and the forms and the punch tricks and the taiokas and the grab arts and stuff like that. I didn't want to do anything choreographed because by the time I opened my little gym in my backyard, I knew I didn't want anything like that. I felt like that was being untrue to what I felt martial arts was all about. So I took on all those. I kept in his mentality and his killer instinct. And I, like I said, I took off anything choreographed and I kept in all the techniques and stuff. And I called it Hawaiian Kenpo. And then I came up with the name The Pit and I came up with the Pit logo. And I started that in 1985. He loved it. He thought it was the greatest. He wishes he did that too. And he came to my school a few times. I already moved to California by then, so we would fly him over. He came to our first black belt test, which was Chuck Liddell tested for his black belt. That was back in '94. Nice. Yeah, Chuck Liddell tested. I had Rick Metzler, who owns the Pit Malibu right now. He tested for his black belt. So Godin, we got to have Godin there, and that was a big honor. And so we got kind of close with Godin. He would come back and forth, and we would go to Hawaii and see him until he passed away in 2001. And that's when I opened my first main gym, or, you know, public gym. Because all my other gyms since 1985 till 2001 were built in my backyard. And I was just training guys like, you know, guys like Chuck Liddell, et cetera. And then 2001, I opened it to the public.
Very nice. Very nice.
That's it. Now we are here.
Very nice. So while, you know, in the, you know, early years of your training, you only trained in that one style, or did you, you know, cross train in any other systems or anything like that? Or?
Yeah. Well, Kaju Kenpo is a you know, multi-system cross training in and of itself. I mean, Kaju Kenpo is karate, judo, jiu-jitsu, kenpo, boxing. So that's why Kaju Kenpo. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, it was a system that was created in 1947 in Honolulu, Hawaii. And they were training at different locations, like in parks and in like rec centers. And it was these, you know, 5 to 7 guys that were just putting their martial arts together because they didn't like the fact that there was all these, you know, white military men downtown, because World War II was, you know, just got over, and it was 1947. And so they started putting their systems together and called it Kaju Kenpo, and they would practice it, or they would get to test it out in the bar. They would go into a bar and, you know, fight with a guy, and they practice the moves they were practicing. And it was the perfect practice. It was like, I mean, now people practice these katas and they say, well, that would work if you did this, this, and this. And that's called bunkai. And so it's kind of like taking something, changing it around, calling it something else. So, but in Kaju Kenpo, it was just real. Now, you can't imagine going and doing that now. We couldn't do that right now. Or you end up killing someone, going to prison, or you end up dying because everyone has a gun, you know? So, but in the old days, that's how you could practice. And guess what they have now? They have the UFC now. Now, the UFC, to me, the biggest thing about the UFC and the best thing about it, because I love the production, I love the UFC, obviously. I've had fighters winning titles in the UFC. I love it. But my main love for the UFC, even when I had fighters fighting in the UFC, I would still be learning the, practicing the stuff, the street stuff, and then wanting to see how it would work in a close to real situation as you could, because you can't go out practicing in the street. But now we can go in the cage and practice it against other great martial artists to see how our techniques work. You know, and then bring it back to our gym and teach them to our students. So I feel that I'm very grateful for MMA for a lot of reasons, especially the UFC. But we get to practice it like that, you know. So, kind of ironic that the martial art itself, which I love so much, Kaji Kempo, started by a bunch of locals to beat up white guys, and now it's a style that, you know, is my style. I've embraced it, and it's you know, it's everything to me. It's you know, I live martial arts, and I have since 1970.
Very nice. So going back to, you know, those early days of when you started training, so, you know, did you, I assume that you had to, you know, start defending yourself from, you know, from the local folks, yeah, and the local bullies, and
Hawaii is a really rough place. It's a really rough place. I love Hawaii, and they talk about aloha spirit, and there are a lot of people in Hawaii with the aloha spirit, but there's a lot of nasty people, just like anywhere. And there's a lot of racism in Hawaii. It's a lot. And I got to see it because I was a little skinny, white, blonde kid. You know, just the typical. And I grew my hair like down to my shoulders when I was like 12 because I wanted to look like that, you know. And I wanted to, I had this thing where I wanted to, you know, I didn't want to run from it. I wanted to like say, no, fuck you, I'm right here. And I got my long blonde hair. And it got... I did go from I went to Kamiki Intermediate, which is, you know, a middle school, and it did get nasty real quick. I got jumped a couple times, and nobody picked on me, but they would jump me because I was, by the time I got to middle school, I'll say eighth grade, when things really started heating up because I started really getting out there. I'd already been training like 2 years with Godin. Godin, there was no like, you know, he's killer instinct, and he'd yell. And I knew, I mean, a lot of F words in class and yelling. And I knew that I was training somewhere where there's guys. And his guys, his black belts were, you know, most of them were his cohorts, parts. They would go with him on crimes, and they were his strong arms, and they were big local guys, powerful guys, you know. A lot of them, you know, like, you know, Sammy Nahino, Teddy Limos, you know, there was these just big, strong guys. And I was like, you know, so that's how martial arts was to me. And that's how I trained it. And that's how you became when you trained there. And I just remember it's just like something clicked when a guy pushed me in the cafeteria and said, give me your lunch money. And lunch money was a quarter, and everybody carried a quarter. And then you go in line, you wait in line. Usually if you were in with the crowd, they'd move you up to the front of the line, because there was the line monitor was a student. It was kind of like the trustee of a prison. The students were letting their buddies come in the front and, you know, cut in line. So it was that kind of thing. And I walked into the cafeteria with my quarter, and some guy came up and said, hey, how will you give me your lunch money? And I was like, it just instinctively, I said no. And he shoved me, and I hit him back, and then I kicked him. And everybody started coming around the cafeteria. And then all of a sudden, it got broken up by a teacher. You didn't get in trouble back then for getting in a fight. Like now, you get in a fight, like two boys getting fights. In a school, in a junior high school or a high school, they like treat them like terrorists. They like, oh, no tolerance. Oh, you're going to be suspended forever, you know, instead of just saying, get back to class. And that's all they did back then was get back to class. But then we got a spanking first. We had to go into the VP, the vice principal's office, and get a spanking. Then we had to go back to class.
But yeah, times have definitely changed.
He said to me, I'm going to fuck you up next week at back campus. And the back campus where all the fights were, it was right by the bus stop, and it was the back of the school, and it was away from the building, and that's where a lot of the fights were. So he said, yeah, I see you Monday. So I remember all weekend, I'm just practicing and practicing, because I knew come Monday, this big local guy was going to beat me up. His name was Daryl Silva. And I knew he was going to beat me up on Monday, so I was like, fuck, I got to practice. So I'm practicing. I'm this little kid, you know. I'm like in seventh, eighth grade. You know, I can't remember if I was seventh or eighth. I think I might have just been the beginning of eighth grade. But anyway, so I go to school, go right to the back campus because I knew that's where he was going to meet me. And there was a crowd there. And we start going. I remember I hit him a couple times and I kicked him. And I remember somebody in the crowd yelling, "Yeah, you can't kick." And I was like, I remember thinking, "What are you talking about? Of course I can kick." I remember that thought that like 50 years ago. But anyway, so we fought. I ended up beating him up. You know, he's bleeding out of his nose. And the teacher comes and breaks it up. But I had beat him up in front of everybody. I mean, and that was Daryl Silva. You know, that wasn't like a normal, that was like the school bully. You know, the big bully. And so I remember just, I had to go to Mr. Chalk's office, you know, get another spanking. But I remember just thinking, holy shit, what just happened, you know? And I didn't think about he was going to attack me again. I didn't think anything else. All I knew was, holy shit, that was big. I knew that was big. And that was so big. It was nobody even picked on me. It's not that nobody picked on me again. It was that I knew that everything was going to be okay. And everything was okay throughout junior high school. I mean, I was like, hey, John, even all the big locals that would be like, "Hey, Howley, fuck you, Howley." You know, after that, it was like, "Hey, John, how you doing?" You know, "Hey." Then when I got to high school, got into a little scuffle the first week of school, but I already had a reputation for most of the people that came from my side. But then there's, you know, in high school, there's people from different junior high schools. So there was some guys that didn't know about it, but they found out like the first week I got into a fight and I just beat the shit out of this guy. And it was funny because the guy that broke up the fight was the PE teacher because the fight happened in PE. And we're playing PE. They were going to do flag football. And the two guys were picking the teams. And one guy said, I was the only one left. No one picked me, maybe because I had blonde hair. And one guy said, "Oh, I don't want Howley on my team." So I walked up to him and I kicked him right in the face. And you know, he fell backwards and they broke us up. And Mr. Ayet, who I still see when we go back to Hawaii, when I do our black belt testing every year in Hawaii, and Mr. Ayet still comes. Mr. Ayet came and broke up the fight, big Hawaiian guy, and I thought, oh shit, I'm gonna get the shit kicked out of me by this teacher. And he goes, "Hey, what happened?" And the local guy said, "Hey, this fucking Howley just kicked me in the face." He said, Mr. Ayet said, "Did you kick him in the face?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Why?" I said, "Because he called me a fucking Howley." And he asked this kid, "Did you call him a Howley, a fucking Howley?" And the guy goes, "Yeah." And Mr. Ayet said, "Okay, well, you deserve it. Now let's play. So basically, let's keep on playing. You deserve what you just got. You should have opened your mouth. So you got kicked. So basically, well, I mean, you know what I mean? It's like fuck around and find out. You know what I mean?" So Mr. Ayet and I, he became, you know, my favorite teacher, you know. To this day, like I said, he still comes to our black belt testing and he usually talks about that story to my students, you know, because that's how different it was back then. But I never got picked on again in high school. Never, never, never. I could walk around with a lot of the other white kids kind of look down when a big Hawaiian guy's coming. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to avert their gaze, kind of scared of making eye contact. But I was like looking at everybody saying, what? You know, I was just, I got a little like chip on my shoulder, you know, mm-hmm. And I knew that Godin had rubbed off on me because Godin was that guy, big local guy. And I felt like I was getting his personality without his looks. But I felt like that in high school, even, you know, when I walked around to different, you know, downtown or over here, over there, I just always felt that from then on. And I never got picked on again. And if it wasn't for martial arts, I would have got picked on a lot. And I would probably right now, if it wasn't for martial arts, I'd probably be sitting in a corner wearing like a muumuu or a long dress. And I'd be having makeup on and I would have been that guy. What is that? Yeah. I don't know what that meant.
No, no, I got you.
Yeah. I would have been a wimp. That's how I'm
saying. Yeah, no, that's definitely a testament to the to martial arts training is, even if you don't have to use those skills, just the confidence and just the way that you carry yourself changes and it really can improve your life. You know, looking at my life, you know, I was very, you know, very shy, you know, not into sports or anything, which is kind of funny considering that, like, you know, I have, you know, my brothers all multiple sports people, my parents both, you know, multiple sports people, and I was just completely on the other side of that spectrum and just not interested in any kind of sports or anything like that. But I did, you know, always, I was always interested in the martial arts. And once I finally got to be a part of it, then, you know, that helped me to, you know, be less shy and be less, you know, introverted and, you know, inside of myself and, you know, just wanting to stay in the house. And it's like, no, I wanted to get out and do more and just had a better outlook on life and how to interact with people. And you know, fortunately, you know, I did not have to, you know, fight off people or anything like that. But just that mental and emotional side of it, really, you know, really makes all the difference.
It makes all the difference. And that's, I mean, I'm such an advocate now for martial arts. It's like, I'm like every parent, you know, it's just the confidence thing. And it comes from different places, for different people. You know, some people it's because they can kick butt now and they love it. They spar and they realize. And some people it's just knowing they have the strength and just that kind of an inner thing, you know. If they take it past that line of severe, extreme confidence and they start bullying, we then, you know, which happens very seldom because when you the more confident you get, very seldom you just feel such inner peace, you hardly ever go to the other side of bullying. Like if you were a bully after martial arts, you had that ingrained in some kind of DNA already, because martial arts never creates bullies unless, like I said, you already have all the DNA to be a bully. But it just gives you overwhelming confidence that lasts with you your whole freaking life. It's like, it's unbelievable. I mean, since like eighth grade, I just remember thinking I just would go everywhere. I never ever once in my life looked down or looked to the side or like kowtowed to anyone. And that's all of martial arts and the way I, you know, of course, Godin, who was Godin, but he was his own. It's the martial arts itself that created that. And I'll never, you know, I think every kid, you know, other sports are great. You know, you play a little soccer, kick a ball, that's great. You know, football's a little rougher. The kids I know that are playing football because they didn't do martial arts, you know, they're gonna go to college. The, you know, what is it, 99% of them aren't gonna ever go to college with it. So you're gonna run around following the kid around playing soccer for, you know, 5 years of his life, and you're traveling and you go a traveling team, club team, and that's great, kicking the ball is great. But at the end of that, now all of a sudden, they can't go anywhere with it when it's done. They didn't get them into college. It just, you got to stop now, you know? So it's like, you look back and you go, oh, that was about $450,000 that I can't get back because my kid wanted to go kick a ball in a net because he was too scared to go do martial arts. We should have made him do martial arts. And then, you know, because the soccer, if throughout life, you can't dribble your way, you know, out of a fight situation that you get jumped, a life or death situation. You can't do that. and you can use your martial arts for the rest of your life. Your martial arts would have been a much better investment for the parent. You know what I mean? I mean, it, even the worst case scenario, you know, I mean, like, martial arts is going to freaking help you. Like soccer won't. I mean, that's not a skill that, you know, nothing. I'm not trashing soccer, guys. My kids all played AYSO, and that's about as far as it should go. But in fact, one of my kids went to college playing soccer. Yeah, my daughter got a scholarship playing basketball. So I'm not anti these games if it can get you somewhere. But martial arts should always be there because it'll get you. It'll stay with you. You know, you can't dribble your way out of a prison rape situation. Think of that. That's not pleasant to think about. And, you know, somebody says, why would I ever be in prison? You know, people think like that. Why would, I'm a nice guy. I'm a law-abiding guy. Why would I ever go to prison? Here, just think of this. Think of this. This is a hard one to think about. If you think of somebody, you're walking somewhere, somebody shoves your wife, shoves her. Some fucking lunatic shoves your wife. Believe me, that might not happen every day, but it does happen. You know, somebody attacking your wife or somebody shoves you. You're walking in a Walmart parking lot, all happy, you're going to go home. You know, your dinner's waiting. You got off work and you want to pick up some stuff at Walmart. And it's like 8 o'clock at night, and you're walking in the parking lot, and just some psycho guy comes up and just fucking shoves you. You know, and he's coming at you like he's gonna hurt you. And you know, if he hits you, you hit your head on your concrete. Next thing you know, you're gonna be in a freaking nursing home with a tracheostomy, with a head injury, and a Filipino nurse changing you every 4 hours. You know what I mean? I mean, there's all kind of bad things that can happen. This, you don't know who this guy is. You pulled them, when you changed lanes, you cut them off about a mile back, but you don't even remember, you didn't even know you did it. But this guy is like crazy. He's had a terrible day. You know, maybe he just got out of prison. Violent guy shoves you. He's about to hit you again. Your training kicks in, bop, 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 boom. And now he bops his head on the concrete and he dies. He dies. This guy that was going to kill you, for whatever reason, just died. And guess what? For some reason, the fucking DA, you know, he wants to make some points. You can't afford a fancy criminal lawyer, so you either get a county lawyer or you can afford a real cheap one, one of the bad ones. You know, so you're getting prosecuted for, you know, manslaughter or murder or something, and you're like, this guy hit me. But the DA just pounds it. Guess what? You're going to prison. They send you to prison. So good guys, while not very, very often, and I worked at a prison for 10 years, some guys are in there on crimes they didn't commit. I think you'll know that. I mean, that's happened to your ancestors or your forefathers, not forefathers, but, you know, people that are black. It happens to them. I mean, the story of the kid that, you know, oh, you got by the woman and rape, and then they found out she was lying, you know, remember? So it can happen. And it can happen to anyone. You can go to prison, you know, without justification. Now you're in prison. And now, talk about confidence. Talk about a bad junior high school or a bad high school. This is the ultimate in bad. This is the ultimate in where you should have been training, because that will make a huge difference in your survival rate.
See? Exactly. Yeah. No, I'm really glad that you.
Story, huh?
So no, no, that a, no, no. That's that. I'm glad that you brought that up
reality.
because we actually touched on this with one of my other guests before about, you know, it's with learning the martial arts, it's not just about, you know, learning the defensive moves and everything, but now we also have to take into consideration the legality of things. And it's different from, you know, state to state, country to country. like, you know, you can, you know, you have that scenario where, you know, yeah, you're in a bar, you're at the grocery store or something like that. And, you know, somebody, you know, steps on your foot or takes your parking space. And, you know, even if they attack you first and, you know, you give them an elbow and, you know, they fall to the ground and hurt themselves. Now it, you know, these days we run into a situation where it's like, oh, well, he can sue you and, you know, you can, you know, yeah, have to pay fines or go to jail or all that. And it's like, well, you know, this guy attacked me, you know, this guy, you know, robbed me and I was defending myself, but because of just the way the laws and stuff are, you know, it's not immediately, you know, a happy ending. The good guys win. Like there's all these other areas that we have to consider now. And, that's, you know, something, you know, you have to look into, you know, what the laws are in your area and not just assume that, oh, I was defending myself and everything's going to be okay. And, you know, the judges are going to be on my side. It's like, no,
but
that's not always.
But, yeah,
not always
you're right 100%. But you know what? If you're a legalator, whatever that means, legalator, like you're making laws. I just made up that word. Legalator.
Like sounds good to me. Legal.
But anyway, if you are, so I think you should make those choices about what's legal and what's not. As an adult, where if there's too many bad ones for you, then you should move somewhere else. Because like California, I love California, but I hate almost everything about it. I just love being, I've been here so long. You know, I moved from Hawaii, I moved here, and I made it my home, and almost everything about it I can't stand. I mean, when we've argued so many different points about so many different, I mean, that this whole past 4 years, I mean, that's just, it's just polarized everything, including us. I mean, we had a city council meeting last till 4 in the morning. 4 in the morning. They've never done that before. It went all night because they were so passionate about shutting me down, shutting my gym down. That's what it was about. It was in my town. It was about shutting me down. I was on the news. I was in the, you know, the papers and on the radio and not because I'm training world champion MMA fighters. It was because I wanted my gym to not get destroyed. Like so many, there are so many other places. 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu School in Long Beach got burnt to the ground. I mean, the windows were smashed in, burnt to the ground. Nobody wanted to steal anything because everybody's saying, what do they want to steal out of a gym? Why do you have to protect your gym? They don't want to steal. They just want to destroy. They didn't steal one thing from 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu in Long Beach. They just destroyed it for the sake of destroying it. I don't have riot insurance in my gym. You know, I don't know what to do. I've trained hundreds of people for fights. I've trained myself for 300 pro fights or 300 sanctioned fights. So I've trained, but I've never trained to protect myself from a riot. And I didn't know what to do. So the only thing I thought of to do is I can't fight off people rushing me more than, you know, like 20 people, 50 people. Whatever. So the equalizer is a gun. So I had a gun. Had a couple guys at my gym with guns. And the visual wasn't very good. I'll admit that. Us holding our guns. But I just wanted to protect my gym. I wanted to deter anyone from thinking that's the place I want to break into. That's the place I want to break the windows. I wanted to deter that. Just keep walking. Fucking fine. I mean, just walk. So I found out, you know, that this the state isn't, you know, I don't like this state for a lot of reasons, but it's home. And I'm not going to leave. I'm not going to leave. People say, why don't you leave? Go to Texas. Go here. I'm not leaving, man. I'm dug in. I love my house. I love my property. I love my community, you know, and I'm never going to leave this place. I'm just going to, you know, if need be, you know, do whatever I got to do, but I'm going to stay here. So that whole thing gave me a different perspective on martial arts and protecting and, you know, community and Ohana. We say Ohana a lot. We say loyalty a lot. And I you know, loyalty is very important to me. I have fighters that are so freaking loyal to me. I feel so honored and blessed. I got guys like Chuck Liddell, Glover Teixeira, Cord McGee, Ramsey Nijem, Tim Kennedy, you know, just people with such loyalty. And it's the martial arts. You know, because if they weren't into martial arts, I don't think loyalty exists on the same level for people that aren't, you know, a martial artist. So just the martial arts mentality of loyalty and Ohana, which means family, and it's just that I'm here, and this is where my family is. This is where my loyalty lays, and you know, I'll do whatever. So I'm not moving. But it's a different way of the bullies trying to take you. It's a different level of bullies, I think, right? You know, so
yeah.
I'm going to stay here. And, you know, after the Army, I was in the Army, and I actually was honored and lucky and blessed. I got to make the All-Army boxing team. So, you know, not just fight for the, you know, I fought for my company. We had company organization day, and I fought, and I won. I beat an MP, and everybody was all happy. And for some reason, I got so lucky. My first sergeant was a local guy, and he had seen me fight before in the Golden Gloves. And I was stationed in Hawaii. So he, you know, I joined the Army because I thought we were going to Iran. Because they took, you know, hostages, and so I was like, fuck, I didn't want to go to the Army ever. I wanted to be probably a cop, and then, you know, keep my fight career, you know, but not really. I knew I wasn't going to make it as my, you know, my life fighting. You know, I knew that, but, you know, I wanted to do it for a while, and then, you know, be a nurse or be a cop or something. That was my highest aspirations, you know, and I thought they were good ones. But you know, that kind of changed, because when this guy knew, he had seen me fight in the Golden Gloves, he's like, and they gave back the hostages. Iran gave them back, so I was like, well, now I'm in the Army. I don't have to go fight, which I thought I was going to have to do, because I didn't join here just to do fucking KP and do guard duty. So I was like, I'm an infantry soldier. I don't want to just. I'm, you know, there's nothing to do. We're not in a war. So I asked my first sergeant Marcus Weary. I love him. Rest in peace. He's gone now. But I said, hey, what do I do, man? The Army, there's no war going on. And I think, you know, I thought there was going to be. I think I made a mistake. How about I just get out, you know, now? Because I don't really belong here, you know? And he's like, he laughed so hard. You just want to get out. Oh, you don't just get out. So he goes, hey, you're John Hackman. You fought in the Gold Gloves last year. I go, yeah. He goes, why don't you join the All-Army boxing team? I said, what does that mean? He goes, that means you'll never do KP or guard duty. I was like, okay, sign me up. So he made some calls, and I fought at tryouts, and they shipped me off. They shipped me off to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and we had a Force Com tournament, and I won. And well, I won runner-up, so I got a place on the team, on the All-Army team. And the rest of the time in the Army for me was just, you know, boxing and training, and, you know, that was it. So that's, but after that, I went to LA because I didn't think Hawaii was the place to continue my fight career. So I moved to LA when I discharged from the Army, and I started fighting, you know, boxing, kickboxing. But I also started having kids, and next thing you know, I have three kids, And I'm not quite as good a fighter as I thought I would. I did win a couple of world titles in kickboxing, but in boxing, I was okay. You know, I wasn't, and that's where I thought the money was, because kickboxing didn't have much money back then. So I knew that whether I won a world title in kickboxing, I can't support my kids on that. And I'm not going to win a world title in boxing. I'm not good enough. So I started working full time and becoming a, you know, then I ended up going to college and became a registered nurse. And that's pretty much what I did up until 2001 when I opened my main gym. I was a registered nurse, you know, to support my family. And then I was fighting just out of my thing because I wanted to fight. So I was kickboxing, won a title while I was a nurse, you know. So it was kind of an interesting career. I was doing both, you know, most of my life. And then 2001, I quit nursing altogether and just stayed with the martial arts thing. And I just took a chance. I said, if it's going to catch, it's going to catch. If not, I'll just have to go back to nursing, but I'm going to give it a shot. And in less than a year, we were in the black and, you know, we were profitable, and I never done anything since.
Oh, that's great. That's an inspiring story. I'm glad that you've been able to you know, really take your passion and you know, make it work for you. You know,
yeah,
where, that's the dream right there. Yeah. So let's go ahead and move into our kind of a lightning round here. So I got a few little fun questions as we kind of head towards wrapping up here. First one being, do you have a favorite technique?
Left hook.
Left hook. Yeah. Very nice. Are you a southpaw fighter? Or?
No. Okay. It's the left hand is my front hand.
Oh, interesting. I don't usually see, you know, the power punches off the non-dominant hand. So that's,
yeah. The left hook is my bread and butter. It's probably 75% of the techniques I threw when I was in fighting. I mean, I was pretty one dimensional a fighter. I was never like a Benny the Jet, you know. Who was my trainer for most of my kickboxing career?
Very nice.
But you know, so, but it was my favorite technique, left hook.
Okay, right on, good. You mentioned before that you know, you removed the forms and such, but I will go ahead and ask it anyway. Do you have a favorite form or set?
I'll say burpees, because I've replaced when we test. We test mainly on, of course, there has to be attendance, attitude, you know, and if it's a kid, we send notes home to the teachers and to the parents, and they have to, you know, check boxes like, yeah, you've never seen, you know, the kid, you know, misusing his martial arts. You've never seen the kid being a bully. The kid treats you with respect and stuff like that. And they check off yes or no. And if they check off no, the kid's not promoting. If they don't show their elders respect, so we do that as a prerequisite. But also, instead of belt testing, everything's on conditioning, like burpees. How many burpees can you do in 7 minutes? How many wall ball sprawls can you do in, you know, 4 minutes? So I do all these tests for the belts. And then they have to show the technique, et cetera. But our main thing that I've replaced forms with would be conditioning. And that's what gets them to the next belt level. Like, you got to do X amount of burpees for blue belt. Then you have to do more for green. So instead of like katas, I put in, you know, physical training exercises.
I like that. That's very, very unique and very useful. I mean, you got to have the conditioning,
Yeah, you don't have to have forms at all, but you do have to have conditioning. So forms are fun and cute if people want to teach them, and then, you know, the kids, they kind of like it, some kids. I tried forms as an upgrade class. Like, I was doing katas because I had to do katas coming up. Mm-hmm. I had to do katas all the way to black belt. And I used to ask my instructor, I'd say, hey, Chief, I hate these things. They make no sense. I'm never going to fight like this. And he would, I swear to God, even as a kid, he would say, shut the fuck up and do them until you get your black belt. And he said, when you get your black belt, you can do whatever you want. Right now, you have to do them. And I was like, okay. So I knew him, you know, I just didn't like him. So I, you know, taking him out, well, it was kind of hard for me. It was kind of emotional, you know, because that was part of our system, you know, but I knew it was just a foolish part of our system. And so I knew that to keep, you know, I had to take him out because it was the right thing to do. And I talked to my instructor and he goes, I think it's a great idea. I wish I did it, but you know, you can do it. You're a black belt now. I support you in doing it. And so I talked to Godin about it. And then I just took them all out.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, that's part of the art is tailoring it and fitting it for your needs and for what you're looking for. So yeah, no, that, you know, the traditionalists may not like it, but you know, that's up to them. You know,
I'm very traditional. I'm one of the most traditional martial artists I've ever met. You know, I'm very traditional. You know, like if we just had an incident where a guy got into an argument with one of my black belts, and, you know, I'm not even saying who was right. Okay. So, yeah, were we talking about kata still?
Yeah, just kind of finishing that thought. So, you know, we took him out, and that's fine. I took him out, and I looked,
and I was like, I tried the, you know, I do some upgrade classes. Like jujitsu is an upgrade class. You can do Hawaiian Kempo, but you can do jujitsu for X amount more. You know, as a gym owner, you know, that's one of our, you know, things that we do. We upgrade, we have merchandise, et cetera. So I tried a kata one. And I came up with a couple of the katas. You know, I did number one. I forget which ones I did, but I kept some Kaja Kempo katas. And I taught it to him. That was going to be an upgrade class. Like one kid showed up once, and then everyone that tried it, you know, didn't like it. So one kid wanted to kind of do them, but everybody else quit the class. So, I mean, I can't have a class with one freaking kid, and nobody else liked it. It's not my demographics, because, you know, I tried it and I told them, this has nothing to do with real martial arts. This is, you know, from the past, and it's kind of like bowing. It has nothing to do with realistic. It's more of a ritualistic kind of thing, kind of like bowing in the way we do our belt testing ceremony. You know, it's just culturally, I use that so that's traditional. But it just never caught on. So I just like, okay, forget it. So now we do, you know, we do CrossFit class or we do BJJ class as upgrades. But the kata one just didn't go. I tried it with kids. Kids and adults don't want to do it in my demographic. So I took them out. And it's like, boom. People say I'm not traditional, but like, if you're in my school for, you know, anything more than 3 minutes, you realize real quick that we're very traditional. You know, we're very traditional. We just, you know, I feel like we have, you know, that's our traditions. That's my traditions are no kata, and you know, we still do the bow, the prayer. We do the pit prayer or the Kaji Kempo prayer after every class. So we're pretty traditional.
Yeah, sounds good. All right. So next question. If there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would that be? Or maybe a couple names. This will probably be challenging for you because I'm sure you've obviously trained with a lot of great fighters and whatnot.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I've been lucky. I've been training with the best boxers in the world, the best kickboxers in the world, the best BJJ guys in the world, the best UFC guys in the world. But there's no people that are alive that I haven't. But Bruce Lee, I would love to train with Bruce Lee. I love Bruce Lee.
Yeah, very, very good. Yeah, very, very inspired. He's inspired many, 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 many people. Yeah. And that's a good one. I like that. Okay, so our last question here, and this is the hardest of them all, but in honor of Ed Parker's love of jokes and humor, do you have a joke and or a humorous story to share with us?
With this martial arts, I'm going to do martial arts related. Oh, okay,
It doesn't have to be martial arts.
Oh, okay. But. All right, well, I got to get martial arts. We had this cocky guy in one of my classes, and this is, I don't know, 2003 or 4. And he was a cocky guy. I thought he was a tough guy. You know, he's kind of, you know, we had kind of a reputation. You know, we're a traditional school. You know, we did the geese, we did kids, but we still had, you know, people knew Chuck Liddell. They knew about the pit, and then we used to just beat the hell out of each other when the pit first started. You know, I mean, that's how I met Chuck. We fought, you know? And so, I mean, the pit was known that it was a backyard gym, but it was, a lot of people went there. We had the pit tattoo, we had a reputation, a really tough reputation, you know? And then, and so it was this guy was kind of one of those guys. He was a tap out guy, you know. Even though I love tap out, it had a, you know, guy that wore a tap out shirt, kind of a rough guy. And I was working with Caesar Gracie. Caesar Gracie is one of the Gracies. He's a great trainer, trained Nick and Nate Diaz, and anyway, jiu-jitsu legend, you know, whatever. But we were working together on something called pit jitsu. So we're going to use pit stuff, a lot of punching, kicking, and BJJ. It was just an MMA, but we gave it a different twist. So we were working together. We were going to make a video series, and he looks like an accountant. Caesar Gracie looks like an accountant. He doesn't look like anything like a fighter. So people don't usually recognize him. So I had him come to one of our sparring classes where they were going to grapple. We do grappling too on sparring. I pretended he was a new, accountant, and he wanted to try a class. He's never trained anything before. So that's what I introduced him as. And I had him go with this guy that thought he was the best guy in class. He was the best grappler. He could choke everybody out. He was kind of an attitude guy. So I said, do you mind? I know you're a lot better than him, but can you go with my buddy Caesar and the accountant? So he thought he was sparring with some, you know, guy that never grappled before or fought before. And he looked like Caesar didn't look like he never did. So anyway, he started working with, next thing you know, Caesar like put him in this sequence of holds and submissions, and he was the guy that was tapping, tapping, tapping. Then he'd get him in something else. And anyway, he found out later who that was, but it was funny when it was happening.
Oh, I like that. I like the undercover boss, you know, sort of situation. So that's good. I like that. So yes, I thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and chat with me and tell me about your journey. And you know, we'll definitely have to do a part 2 and 3 and 4 and get some more of you know what you've been through. I would say right now is our or I should say your time for shameless self-promotion. So if there's anything you wanted to bring up that we hadn't discussed, or any plugs, or just anything you want to say at this point, now is your time to do so, and then we'll close out for today.
Yeah, if you're in the Central Coast area, man, you want to engage in the most important activity for your kid or for you, check out the Pit. We're right there on Grand Avenue and Arroyo Grande. And if you can't, and you're one of the 9 billion out there that you can't come to see me, I got a school online. Go to thepit.tv and we do our virtual classes. So you can do that too. Bing.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, thank you. Thank you so much again. Can't wait to get this episode out and let everyone hear it. And just thank you so much for your time.
All right, brother. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.